PSI in the world. I'm John Batchelor. The Russian economy under sanctions. I welcome my colleague Michael Bernstam at the Hoover Institution, my guide on the Russian economy, on energy, and on currency. We begin with a report in the New York Times. Current and former U.S. Treasury officials want the administration to go further than the $60 cap now on Russian oil and target the shadow fleet tankers with specific penalties that could restrict their sales or force them out of commission. Michael, the shadow fleet, it's large. It's somewhere between 90 and 120 ships. However, oftentimes we've reported that it's been either elbowed aside or not adequate. And now Treasury is saying, no, it's more considerably significant than we believed, and we need to do something about it. However, they've always been moderated in their approach because they don't want to damage the global price of oil. So what is it they're proposing to do now about the shadow fleet and about that $60 cap? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you. The most important fact to keep in mind as a background fact about the shadow fleet is that it is seaborne oil shipments as opposed to pipeline oil shipments. And because of the European embargo on the Russian oil exports, which with a few exemptions of small countries, Hungary, landlocked countries, Hungary, Slovakia, and Czechia, the Russians cannot sell much oil by pipelines to China, less than 1 million barrels per day. So the importance of seaborne fleet, which sells oil around the world, has increased since the beginning of the war, and especially since the embargo of the sanctions on oil since the end of 2022. Now, because of the sanctions, because of the price cap of $60 per barrel of crude, the Russians cannot sell above $60 by using official shipments and insurance of Western countries. So they have to resort to the so-called shadow fleet. Part of it is their own, up to 120 vessels of their own, and about close to 100 used tankers around the world under the flags of so many countries, traveling around the world, reloading in the open sea, and shipping around the world. So now there is a conflict between the White House and the Treasury Department, because the Treasury Department is concerned about money. It's their mandate. They're concerned about revenues that the Russians are getting from their oil export. And the White House is concerned about the global oil supply, so that the prices of gas in the United States don't go up for consumers on the eve of the elections. So they're concerned about politics. They're concerned about the price of gas and about politics, electoral politics. And so there is a natural conflict. There was a report in the Wall Street Journal that said that of 91 tankers that the Russians have in their shadow fleet, only 14 were under sanctions and the rest received individual exemptions. Now it is a report in the New York Times that there are 120 Russian tankers under sanctions, but about 100 of them getting exemptions. So this is not kind of sanctions in full swing. Nonetheless, they're working because the price cap forced Russia to take the discounts from the oil they are selling to India and China, about $13 per barrel. Used to be as high as $35 per barrel discount in the early 2023. Now it is more narrow. And they're losing their export revenues on that. And so this is kind of partial effect, which reduces Russian oil revenues by about $30 billion per quarter, which is a lot. It's $120 billion a year. Their revenues, export revenues have declined because of the price cap on oil.
There would be no way to get any more because it would affect the global price of oil. They're estimating in the New York Times that gasoline would go to $7 a gallon. That's unacceptable. There's another story, however, that it's very hard for me to summarize other than to say the renminbi, which is the Chinese currency, in Russia is replacing the euro and dollar. What does that mean?
Well, what happened is that because of the United States sanctions, the Moscow currency exchange stopped trading in dollars and euros. And since the Russian firms and the Russian banks need some foreign currency, they switched to renminbi. Effectively, renminbi, yuan, renminbi, has become the reserve currency of the Russian financial system. Now the Central Bank of Russia is supporting banks by providing liquidity in renminbi. Households are saving in renminbi. Russian companies are buying renminbi to pay for their imports. And lots of countries don't accept renminbi because it is not a globally traded currency. But when they pay commissions, they buy dollars, they buy euros. And this way, renminbi has become the principal currency, foreign currency that is functioning in Russia. Used to be the time before the U.S. sanctions, before the, let's say, May 2024, when renminbi role in the Russian currency transactions was about 53%. Now it is 99%. No trade in dollars, no trade in euros inside Russia for major swaps of currency. And of course, there is a huge demand for renminbi. So what the Russians are doing now, in addition to the trade with China, they are charging in renminbi for their exports. So they're getting about $9 billion a month in for their exports from China, but they're getting $13 billion a month in renminbi from global exports, which means that $4 billion a month, lots of countries are paying to them in renminbi, and the Russians are using the surplus as their way of savings and their way of supporting the financial system.
Inflation. I read in Newsweek magazine that inflation now officially is at 8.5%, despite the fact that the Russian Central Bank has raised its target rate for interest to 16%, and there's talk that it's going to go to 18%. Is that going to control or defeat that 8.5% inflation, or are they just on a treadmill to the end of the world?
The problem with these estimates is that they are not reliable, they cannot be reliable, because there are lots of new products. It is a military economy. They produce lots of goods they didn't produce at all. For example, the official statistic is that the number of artillery shells and drones is a new product, has increased by a factor of 15 since the beginning of the war. So they have to price all these goods in some kind of arbitrary way or the way they sell to their customers. And this distorts all the measures of inflation, all the measures of economic growth. This is known in economics as the index numbers problem, that new goods come to the market, how do you price them? So in addition to this official inflation data, the Central Bank of Russia issues also what they call observed inflation. It is surveys, they go around, they ask people how do they pay, they ask firms, and the observed inflation is between 14 and 17%. Uh-huh. So it is much higher, it is much higher. The producer price index is also 17%. So eventually inflation is going up. And of course, they have to raise their interest rates. They will have to.
Right. Michael Bernstam at the Hoover Institution, watching the Russian economy under sanctions in wartime. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.